Technorama episode 617. Wait, did you hear that? Hello and welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you're joining for the first time, thank you. Thank you for joining us. It's 617. We've been doing this for quite a number of years. And if you're rejoining us, thank you. Welcome back. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Joining me all the way across the country, which is why we don't need the masks because we're social distance. I'm in Phoenix. Joining me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm great. I'm better than great.
I had the audio done, so it was a little weird to say. Did you hear that? The music was low.
I know.
What?
We're getting a little meta there. Yeah.
Accidental happenstance.
I'm doing great. I'm gearing up for Halloween. Getting ready to start putting the stuff out in the yard for next week.
Well, I was thinking, is there a point this year? Do you expect kids to come around and trick or treat?
I expect it to be much lighter, but my parents usually come over for Halloween. We sit in the driveway and give out candy. I got to sit out there with a mask. I'm going to do it. I'm going to give out some candy.
All righty.
I'll be prepared. How about that?
You put the ball at the end of the driveway with the candy and carry a gun and say, one piece only.
Yeah. Now I'm going to load it up and go, shoot it with them.
Like an air cannon.
Yeah.
Here's your bag of Cheetos. Yeah. Boom.
Hey, you want a t-shirt with that? Funk.
Right in the gut. Come on, Batman.
Yeah. Turn on a leaf blower. Start throwing some. I could put a roll of toilet paper and then a leaf blower and toilet TP the kids.
Okay. Wow, you're getting really creative. I'm kind of getting scared now. Don't go to Craig's house. All right. Yeah, we have some feedback for you.
Feedback?
Feedback from you.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh boy!
Mailman, mail today.
Our question of the week this week was, if you were an assassin, this one's kind of dark, Craig. I wonder where you're coming up with these things. If you were an assassin, what would your trademark be that tells people it was you who committed the crime? And my sister jumped right in and said, wine stains.
Ooh. the old wine killer.
You killed Gorbachev. Eric Miller says, never forget what you learned in Ninja Code Camp. The other developers should never even know that you changed anything. Not sure how that came into Assassins, but okay, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
Melissa says, coffee grounds.
Sprinkle it around or just like on their face? But
keeps the drug sniffing dogs away. Oh, speaking of dogs, Mike says dog hair.
Dog hair.
My sister Suzette says a card from the tarot, like the Ten of Swords. Ooh, the tarot killer. Nice.
Mm.
Gary Lindros is going economical. He just says a paperclip.
Hey, is it like just unfolded or just like a regular out of the box? You just throw it down.
Jonathan Strickland's being a little too literal. He's just saying one of your business cards, like that kind of gives it away.
One of his or yours?
One of your business. Well, that's kind of what Brian Brown said. He said, I'd leave hair clippings from you and Craig.
Get back from the lab.
Thanks,
hey,
man.
We have the DNA matches these two guys that do a podcast, right?
Clinton says an empty Dunkin' cup. So apparently he's going to Dunkin', then, well, don't leave the coffee. Never leave the coffee.
Yeah.
Michael Slobodnik says nothing. I'd use frozen icicles so they'd melt away, leaving no evidence. Mwahaha.
Hey, we saw that on Mythbusters. That doesn't work.
Christine Ann Hardy says pink feathers.
Hmm. Okay.
Mike Wills says a small chunk of wire. Trampas says a Hallmark card for when you care to send the very best, or a Hallmark Christmas ornament. Jack Mangan says AOL mailer CDs.
Lord knows there's plenty of them around.
AOL, the AOL killer strikes again. How do you know? Yeah. How do you know it's not a copycat?
I wonder what their budget was on those things back in the day. You know, that wasn't cheap. Well, even though they printed a bunch of them,
internet wasn't cheap either. We have some from another page. Did you post this too?
I did. So our Technorama page, John Miller Jr. said pixie sticks.
Nice.
John Kratzer says a business card showing pi R2 equals Apple.
CJ says a trails of glitter.
Trails of glitter. Hey, wait. No, that would make it too easy for them to track you down.
Yeah, because you can't ever escape the glitter. All right, read Sweet Steve's long list.
Oh, wait a minute. John, a guy who used to work with John Littlepage, a dirty diaper.
Ew. Yeah. Okay, you can read his reply if you go to our Technorama Facebook page. I'm not going to read it over the air. It's not family friendly. Yeah.
So, what's that?
John Littlepage's reply.
Oh, yeah. Sweet Steve says, I would only target victims named Roy. Then I would leave a classic Kilroy was here graffiti tag above his body. But I would write Kilroy was here. If I got caught, my defense would be, Tetrama made me, wait, what? Made me do it.
No.
Not that I have anything against anyone named Roy, other than their name happens to be, happens to work with my narrative. Okay. Yeah.
The Kilroy killer. Very nice. Thank you, everybody. We'll have another question for you at the end of the show and put that on social media next weekend for more Grits and Shins.
Oh, by the way, I had a animated GIF on my post. It was some origami. So
we had a lot of animated GIFs on this one. The pixie sticks and everything. Let's do the history thing because there's some good laughs in here. I think it was almost like we picked them for the hard names. On this day in history for October 28, 2020, this is the 302 day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are just 64, or if you're in hex, that would be what? 40 hex days left.
Yeah.
Count in hex, you get fewer days. It was on this date in 1492 that Christopher Columbus landed in Cuba on his first voyage to the New World.
And it was also 384 years ago today that the Massachusetts Bay Colony voted to establish a theological college that would later become Harvard University.
Harvard. 294 years ago today, the novel Gulliver's Travels was published.
And also on October 28th, 1886, President Cleveland dedicated the Statue of Liberty.
It wasn't in Cleveland.
No, it was not.
On October 28th, 1942, the Alaskan Highway first connected Alaska to the North American Railway Network at Dawson Creek in Canada.
By the way, I was trying to come up with a quick say it wasn't the president of Cleveland. It was President Cleveland. Anyway.
I got it. Move on.
All right. So it was also on this date in 1948 that Paul Mueller was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine for his discovery of the incidental properties of DDT.
Thank you. Oh, boy, Paul Mueller. Or DDT, I think. You caused no end of environmental pain. Yeah, that same day bugs. In 1950. No, it killed. It got into the food chain. It was like lead, man. It was killing bald eagles. Even though bald
is
eagles,
that the stuff that they were spraying the yeah, in the and they'd spray in streets kids and I would with, go running. Yeah, the kids would. Aah!
Yeah. Uh huh. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
same date in 1956, Elvis Presley received a polio vaccine on national TV.
And on October 28th, 1971. Prospero became the only British satellite to be launched by a British rocket.
Wasn't he only? Wasn't he one of the X-Men or something?
Prospero. Yeah, Prospero. He was a cousin of one of them.
He was a financial genius. I'm Prospero. Yeah. I'm good at.
He was cousin of Magneto.
It was on this date in 2009 that NASA successfully launched the Ares IX mission that is not supposed to be the Roman numeral 9. It has a dash in it. The only rocket launch for its short-lived Constellation program.
And also on today in 2014, I don't know where I got 19 from, a rocket carrying NASA's Cygnus CRS Orb 3 resupply mission to the International Space Station exploded seconds after taking off the Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport in Virginia.
Oh, bad times, bad times. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday,
guys. I happened to read about that, and I forgot about that today.
Here come the names, and there is something in here that ties back to Elvis in a little bit. Happy birthday goes out on this date to French mathematician and engineer Antoine de Parceau, born on this date in 1703.
Okay, I'm not going to even pretend. Ignace G. Schismarmonti, since Martnani, I don't know. Croatian priest, mathematician, astronomer, and explorer, was born on the same date in 1718.
We just call him Iggy.
Yeah, that's right, pretty much.
Born October 28, 1793, American businessman founded Remington Arms Eliphalet Remington. Guess what his Eliphalet? Name is? His name is Eliphalet. It's E-L-I-P-H-A-L-E-T. Eliphalet? Anyway, Remington is his last name, and he started the Remington Arms Company.
I think Eliphalet sounds right. So Belgian mathematician and theorist Pierre-François Verhulst was born on 216 years ago today.
That last name kind of reminds me of what do you get when you cross a rhino, a hippo, and an elephant?
A Verhulst?
Hell if I know.
I should have known that one.
Wilhelm Anderson, the Belarusian Estonian astrophysicist and astronomer, was born 140 years ago today.
And born October 28th, 1905, Dutch mathematician Tatiana Pavlana and Ehrenfest.
I love the Ehrenfest. Every year we go. Never mind.
Yeah, Ehrenfest. It's where they have the balloons and you ride them. And
yeah. As I noted before, today is the birthday of Jonas Salk, the guy who came up with the polio vaccine. You think it was any accident that Elvis had his polio vaccine on TV? Jonas was born on this date in 1914.
And also born on the same date in 1955, American businessman and philanthropist, co-founded Microsoft, Mr. William Bill Gates.
He's only 65. He seems older than that, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
American computer science and mathematician Landon Kurt Knoll was born on this date in 1960.
And also turning 53 today is American video game designer, co-founded id Software, John Romero.
And American computer scientist Jawed Karim is 41 today. Our listener birthdays include, in the last 30 seconds, October 28th, Dylan Licata from San Antonio. 29th is Big Jim Clark, Megapodtastic. Wolf Geek on the 30th. November 1st is Amber Elstad. Hey, she gets a special ding. Mark McCoy on the 2nd and Ken Pace on the 3rd. That's the way it was on this day in history for October 28th, 2020. If you want to get your birthday on the birthday calendar, you can go to the URL that you see there on the screen. Or, of course, if you're listening to this, that doesn't do you any good. You have to go to chuckchat.com/birthday or chuckchat.com/wiki. Get your name on there. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. We also have people that have put their wives on there, their girlfriends, their boyfriends, their girl boyfriends.
Just dates in general.
Just things they need to be reminded of because they're listening to Technorama 6 months later and go, oh, I forgot a birthday.
Oh, so, that's when the coffee pot was created.
That's the history segment, not the birthday.
Oh, that's
part.
Right.
Yeah. Go over and get your birthdays on there.
Oh, that's when my son was created. How about that?
All right. Yes, that would work. Random. This is a bad news one. So let's do a random bad news.
Bad news, nobody.
Would you like to start?
Sure. So NASA collected some. I'm sorry, the article's coming up. NASA collected some asteroid dust, but it's leaking on its return journey.
Bad news.
So. Yeah, sort of bad news. In case you missed the news, NASA pulled off a pretty complicated maneuver. It collected dust from asteroid Bennu, which we've been talking about it ad nauseum, for a while. Every once in a while, this story keeps popping up. It's a rock speeding through space at some 200 million miles from Earth. In fact, NASA's OSIRIS-REx, that sounds like somebody that should be in a Marvel movies. SpaceX did the job so well that an issue has cropped up. Since the collection on this last Tuesday, some of the sample is leaking into space because the lid was jammed open by the large amounts of material. So the big concern now is that particles are escaping because they're almost the victim of our own success, said Dante Lorata, OSIRIS-REx principal investigator at the University of Arizona in Tucson, said large particles left the flap open. Particles are diffusing into space. They aren't moving very fast, but nonetheless, it is valuable scientific material. So four years after it launched, the spacecraft retrieved a tiny bit of Bennu. You can wipe that off your foot, you know, if you get some on your, on Tuesday in a process that took 16 seconds. So NASA had to shift plans because of the leak. The agency is intending to have the collection device stored in its return capsule as soon as Tuesday, opting to skip a step in which the sample would be measured. NASA knows it collected more than enough. And now we won't know the exact size of the collection until it reaches Earth in 2023. So, you know, leave them wanting more, you know, just got something to anticipate, right?
I was thinking if they, you know, scatter enough of this stuff, we'll have a really good meteor shower one of these days.
I don't think it's that big of a sample.
Doesn't take much. Grains of sand, man, is what you see in most meteorites.
Well, that's true, but hopefully they can kind of contain most of it and keep it, hold it. It's like, you know what it reminds me of is getting out of the car with some fast food or something, and you're trying to hold, you know, the bag and the drinks and everything and make sure it gets in the house without spilling anything.
and the bag is slowly tearing.
Huh?
The bag is slowly tearing.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I got to get it in the house. Set it on the table quick.
All right, we have another one from the Los Angeles Times. Let's see if we can find this one. Not that one. Looks like I'm going to be reading this right. Oh, there it is. We didn't reorder these properly, Craig. Okay, now
there's a little link that says WebView right there. You just click it. It takes you right to it. What?
Where? Oh, that one. That takes us to ours. Isn't that going to open another window that I already have open?
Just a tab.
Yes. Now I'll have like, and it asked me to sign in. That didn't work. We're going to work on our process.
You're supposed to sign in first. That's all right.
I am signing. I'm looking at it in another window.
Oh, that's fine. But we'll work on it.
We're trying something new, people. Apologies for the operational details. Like power and water, the internet has been shown by the pandemic to be a necessity for households. It's time for it to be regulated as a utility, says the Los Angeles Times. After months of being stuck at home, many Americans know full well that there are three things they can't live without. Two of them are power and water. The third, I'm sure, will be obvious to all. Internet access. Imagine this prolonged ordeal without being able to work or attend school from home, without email, without being able to shop online, without streaming video or music. Oh, the humanity. Well,
humanity, manatees.
Huge manatees. What do they have to do with the pandemic?
Right.
The few times my home has lost power and or internet access since the pandemic began, including just this week, it felt like life came to a crashing halt. The harsh reality of isolation became impossible to ignore. Quote, we're looking at something that has truly become a necessity for survival, says Lisa Gilbert, executive vice president of the advocacy group Public Citizen. It's critical to the functioning of society. For that reason, she told me, treating the internet like electricity or water is the way we need to think about it, which is to say the internet has grown into utility and internet access should be regulated as such. I heard as much from a number of experts in the field. If it wasn't clear before, it's now crystal clear that internet access is necessary to survive in the contemporary world similar to electricity, says Catherine Powell, a law professor at Fordham University who focuses on digital rights and civil liberties. Susan Aronson, director of Digital Trade and Data Governance Hub at George Washington University, went so far as to say affordable high-speed internet access, quote, is a service that government should provide. Does government provide us with the power and water to? No, they don't.
I have to pay for it.
If you turn it over to the government, you're going to be regulated and there will be all kinds of things you can and cannot do. And there's a lot of people that just don't want to see that happen. And then they can charge that long awaited internet tax. If anybody was waiting for that. So what are your thoughts on treating it like a utility?
Well, aside from the government regulation, I think we're kind of there. I mean, it is a luxury, but then now this school, you know, schools are kind of requiring it because they got to do remote learning and, you know, we're working from home. So it almost is about as essential as a road, wouldn't you say, to get to work or to get to that school? So I think maybe some level of internet and then you pay for, I don't know. I'm just shooting in the dark there, but I don't know if I want the government.
Right.
I don't know. I don't have the answer. What do you think?
Like you said, it is a service. So is electricity. So are a lot of things that we use. If it becomes a utility, especially if it's a utility owned by the government, I start to get an uneasy feeling because now we're paying, they're either going to raise our taxes to pay for that. Think about this. We're paying, what, about 100 and some dollars a month for high-speed internet, depending on where you live and what service you're getting. I realize there are variables all over the place, but let's just take a rough estimate and say $100 a month. Is your tax now going to be increased $100 so that you can get internet?
You know it will.
And what about the equipment? And what's right now, the cable company can jack their rates at any time. So now we have people voting on whether or not they can increase your taxes for internet. And are my taxes, is it going to be more than $100 to help offset the cost of people who don't have internet right now? Because if we're saying it belongs in everybody's home, like electricity, suddenly I've got to pay for other people's internet. Okay.
Go ahead.
There is no simple answer.
No, but something did just occur to me that there are too many private entities that do have a hand in built out the internet, much less control it or run it at the moment. It's not just a government, you know, they would be taking money, infrastructure, all kinds of stuff from people, you know, for AT&T or, you know, whoever has infrastructure here in my town. You know, the local phone company built out the infrastructure here over time. Why would that? I don't see how that could be an infrastructure. They would have to take control of it, the government, to be able to provide it at a certain level for tax. I don't know.
Or create the next generation, install the infrastructure to take us to the next, you know, said, hey, everybody's going to have fiber and the government's going to pay for it. Here come the taxes to help pay for that. But yeah, you're right. What happens to AT&T and Cox and Comcast and all the other people who have invested in all of this stuff? Verizon, it's like, well, okay. And
Innovation, like we got the Starlink and other satellite providers too, you know.
Exactly.
I don't know. I believe we're at the point where it is kind of utility, but I don't know if a good answer for, you know, I don't want the government necessarily taking it over.
Wow. That was probably one of the most thought-provoking articles we've had in a while.
Yeah.
So much so, I think we need to take a short break. Hey,
it must be the beard.
Are you stroking it thusly?
Okay. Did you shave today?
Yes, I did.
Got beards?
Nope, I shaved. We're going to be right back. Hang on.
Take a facts-based journey through the cosmos with AstronomyCast. Join me, Dr. Pamela Gay, and my co-host, Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today, as we discuss not just what we know, but how we know it. Topics range from dark matter to why Pluto isn't a planet. Get your episodes today at astronomycast.com or look for us in iTunes.
Hey, this is Colin Ferguson from Sci-Fi's Eureka. I play Sheriff Jack Carter. And now back to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
I'm getting better at running the video. Thanks, Mom.
Uh-oh, Donna's out of a job.
Well, that means more money for us.
Yeah, it's going to be rolling in now. I can see it. Yeah.
We have one story in the Hacks of Strange Stories, so let us roll on with that. I think it's your turn.
Sure. So the physicist 3D print a boat that could sail down a human hair.
There's a song in there somewhere. I'm not sure what it is, but okay.
Riding down the river hair.
This almost looks like a Steamboat Willie's boat.
It does look. Actually, I think that's what it is.
Okay, read on.
So researchers in Leiden University have 3D printed the smallest boat in the world, a 30 micrometer copy of Benchy, the tugboat, a well-known 3D printer test object. I have seen this before, but I didn't realize it was this small. The boat is so small it could float down the interior of a human hair. I want to see the test subject on that. Printed boat is part of an exploration of microswimmers, microscopic organisms, or objects that can move through liquids. Natural examples of microswimmers are bacteria and sperm. This tiny benchy propels itself using a bit of platinum that reacts with the hydrogen peroxide.
That's pretty cool. They printed this boat, but then put a piece of platinum in there and it moves. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's awesome. So the most interesting thing is how they were able to print the little boat's cockpit and open space that requires a lot of geometric trickery to build. And yes, it is like a little, almost like a little tiny house or guard shack on top of the boat. A laser is focused inside the droplet that locally hardens the focal spot of the laser, said researcher Daniela Kraft. By moving the laser through the droplet in a controlled way, we can write the swimmer's shape we want. So because the print is taking place inside the droplet, we are printing layer by layer, and we can maintain the open space.
You know what they should have shaped it like? That the little ship from Fantastic Voyage.
I was just going to say the same thing. Oh, okay. Good night, everybody.
Awesome. Craig and I.
About to say the same thing.
Working together too long. Oh, it's kind of funny.
Pretty cool.
A little boat with some platinum in it going.
And you know what? It does have the detail, like the little anchor hole on the ship, and the little chimney on the little cockpit. It's awesome.
Alrighty, where do you tie that thing up?
To the scalp.
No, it's moving through what, hydrogen peroxide?
Mm-hmm.
It's in a fluid. It said it's thin enough to go inside a hair. It's not where it's going.
Right. Oh well, I was thinking on top of a human hair. Anyways, it's a scalp. Anyway,
have you seen the surface of a human hair? All the ridges and bumps.
It's more
and stuff?
Scaly. Yes, yeah. It looks scaly up close.
That's not where you want to be sailing this little boat.
No, it looks like dragon skin, I think.
Yeah, we all have dragon scalp.
Yeah.
All right,
some days I felt like it.
On to the next story. No, shout out to the chat room first. Who do we see in the Facebook chat? I've got Clinton Alvord, John Miller Jr., Amy Bowen.
Mm-hmm.
What else have you seen?
Kathy Spurgeon Lake, Luke. Excuse me.
That's
Luke.
Right. Okay. Do we see any others
that's
that
all
are
I
not?
See.
Okay. So far, so good. Thanks, everybody. I know there are some other people watching that are coming and going. So much appreciated as you join us here on Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern Time on Facebook. We're going to try and get YouTube back online. So we'll see what happens there. Mm-hmm. Flipping over to Remember When. That would be the green button here. Okay. Remember when it says life on Venus? Yes, it's true. Millions of space nerds reacted with joy Monday to a study showing the atmosphere of Venus containing phosphine, a chemical byproduct of biological life. But none would have been more thrilled or less surprised by the discovery than the late, great Carl Sagan, who said, "This day might come." More than 50 years ago, he said that. Sagan actually got his start by studying our closest two planets, Mars and Venus. No, not Vulcan.
Vulcan's not here anymore.
He predicted the surface of Venus would be insanely hot even before NASA's first Venus probe in 1962, which he worked on, confirming it. And he was the first scientist to see Venus's hellscape as the result of a runaway greenhouse effect. He said, yep, that's why it's so hot, and that's why it's all cloudy. They had a greenhouse that ran away, and that's what Earth is going to be like shortly. Well, he didn't say that part. One he knew could point the way to Earth. Yeah, he did say that. Could happen to us. Sorry, I'm reading and commentating at the same time. It does not work, people. Just read. So, it was all the more surprising when Sagan co-authored a paper proposing we might still one day find microbial life above our sister planet. Quote, if small amounts of minerals are stirred up to the clouds from the surface, it is by no means difficult to imagine an indigenous biology in the clouds of Venus. While the surface conditions of Venus make the hypothesis of life there implausible, no, he said implausible, not impossible, because we do have extremophiles that live in some pretty crazy wild places in Earth, yes. The clouds of Venus are a different story altogether. As Sagan pointed out, a high carbon dioxide atmosphere was no obstacle up at the 50 kilometer or 31 mile layer. At the top of Venus clouds, conditions are actually hospitable and almost Earth-like. Organisms could thrive in the upper reaches the same way bacteria thrives around superheated CO2-rich vents at Yellowstone. And sunlight and water vapor to CO2, he said, and you have the recipe for the building blocks of life. Photosynthesis. So we can have floating forests in the clouds of Venus? No. Just 11 years after Sagan made his prediction, another Venus probe discovered methane in the atmosphere, which could be considered a predictor of the presence of organic materials like cows.
Cows on Venus?
Yes, that's where all the methane comes from. Runaway greenhouse gases. Too many cow farms.
That's what I'm hearing from Sagan here.
Yep. Scientists like Sagan were cautious about the discovery. No one could prove methane meant life beyond a reasonable doubt. So, as you might expect, the Venus community, well, not the community on Venus, the Earth community about Venus. The Venus community was abuzz with excitement over the phosphine discovery Monday.
Venus community. I'm sorry, that's a funny thought.
How an elephant got in my pajamas, I'll never know. Not least because the NASA administrator had just tweeted the magic words, time to prioritize Venus. There is, of course, caution in spades. Phosphine is also found in vast churning gas giants of Jupiter and Saturn. But to explain why it would be present on a rocky planet as small as Venus, because of life, scientists say, you have to propose some geological process, which we don't yet know about. The exciting discovery of phosphine in the Venus atmosphere just reinforces the growing body of evidence that Venus is likely, perhaps most likely, the most likely, other place in the solar system where life might now or in the past have existed, says NASA's DR. Venus holds the keys to our own understanding of evolution of rocky planets as homes for life. So not only what our planet could be if the gases run away, if greenhouse effect runs away, but what our planet might have been at one point. Pretty darn cool.
This is also interesting from the article. They were talking about the Project Havoc that NASA unveiled about going to Venus. And it's basically a Zeppelin. And they said, this is the cool part. They said, basically, you don't need to fill it with helium or hydrogen. Just regular old Earth air would float atop Venus's dense atmosphere. Tear the balloon's fabric, and the high pressure would actually keep the air from escaping for weeks. That's because the pressure would hold the earth air together.
Okay. I
thought it was kind of neat.
Hmm.
Interesting. It's just a visual. It was like, you know, just still sitting there with a tear and the air's not escaping. So.
But then how is it floating?
No, they were just saying that the air would stay together.
Okay. Oh,
because
okay.
of the pressure. Gotcha. It wouldn't just dissipate. So, you know, you ever seen those slow motion animations where they poke a balloon, it goes mm-hmm. in it, you know, the rubber goes. Just imagine it would do that. And the, whatever was inside would just stay there.
You do that. Want to do another story?
Sure.
What have we discovered now?
Well, we discovered that a human toddler and a mammoth crossed paths in ancient New Mexico. I'm sorry, ancient New Mexico. Some footprints actually suggested
a human toddler and a mammoth walk into a swamp.
Wrecked them, damn near killed them. Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, so someone, maybe an adolescent, maybe someone older, rushed across the edge of a lake, across edge of Lake Ontario.
Not Ontario. Read that again.
Ontario. Excuse me.
Yeah, Lake Ontario is not in New Mexico.
How do you know? Hey, look, you know, your truths are yours. So, Lake
Your theories are just dead wrong.
Lake Ottawa. Slipping as they walked, but moving steadily ahead. Evidence suggests that the person was carrying a child approximately 3 years old. I don't know how they grab all that, get all this. Setting the child down for a moment in at least three separate places along the journey before continuing. Wow, that's some Sherlock stuff right there.
When you see the image of the footprints, you'll get it.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, while this person was gone, an enormous proboscidean, a Colombian mammoth or a mastodon, lumbered across the path, stepping on a couple of the footprints. In fact, potentially three proboscideans.
Mammoths.
Yes, mammoths. I'm going to search and replace and put mammoths in here. Moved across the landscape, cutting across the tracks left by the human. Time is hard to determine, but at another point, a giant ground sloth happened to be making its way to near Lake Ottero as well. Its tracks indicate a decided awareness of the human and changed its behavior. I'm trying to figure out where they stretched to see all this. So where it may have lifted up 2 feet to smell the air, to ascertain its own safety and determine what lay ahead before quickly changing direction and moving away. The same person, or perhaps a different person, walked back to the initial trackway at some point later, but the footprints indicate that they were no longer carrying something. I guess they fed it to the kid to get away. fed the kid to the sloth.
The sloth isn't going to eat the kid.
Yeah. Or perhaps the child was left behind. These scenes are described in a remarkable paper published earlier this month in the Quaternary Science Reviews, and they interpret actions taken by humans and other animals that lived in what is now New Mexico and at least 10,000 years ago. Today, that area is White Sands National Park.
That's pretty cool. So there's some pictures on the screen if you want to take a look at them with the various footprints. And you can see there's big footprints, and then there's some big humanoid footprints, then little footprints. So, yeah, when they said they put this kid down a couple of times while they were walking, you know how kids are. It's like, uppie, mommy, uppie. They also said that the mammoth footprints, later on in the article, they said, it's not inconceivable that little kids like to play in puddles. They do today. They did back then. So they're making all these footprints as they were romping around in this kind of wet area, because
yeah.
It used to be much wetter than it is today at White Sands. And mammoths were also there, probably getting some drinking water. And giant sloths were there, because we used to have giant sloths in North America. And occasionally these giant sloths would be walking along, and then they'd get up, like you said, get up on their back legs, take a sniff around, and then mm-hmm. get back down. So you can tell a lot from the footprints. It's pretty darn amazing what these pictures show. And just to be captured for all time, for 10,000 years, you don't think about that when you leave behind some footprints when you're walking around outside. Go, gee, I wonder if these will be around in 10,000 years for somebody to look at.
That's pretty amazing. I wonder, I mean, that had to be a remote area where nobody's really going through, because I would imagine it would get run over or walked over or something, but between then and now, for crying out loud.
White Sands is pretty remote right now.
Yeah. That's interesting. And I'm still curious, and maybe I should read the whole article, but I didn't read the whole entire thing.
It goes on. It's a long article. We're not going to read the whole article.
It's a long article, but just to figure out how they can surmise that all these things happened within a certain amount, a certain timeline. So it looks like that they happened within a day or, you know, enough for the sloth to go, huh? start sniffing around.
Well, you think about it. When you're in a muddy area, it doesn't stay muddy forever.
No.
It's muddy for generally, unless it's a swampy area to begin with and has natural water percolating up. It rains, the water softens up, you leave your footprints, the rain and the ground dry up, and often something else comes blowing in to cover them up. So they're now preserved. If it's a muddy area, kind of like when we go hiking in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, if you're walking alongside this headwaters to what will become a creek and a river, the headwaters are often mucky, mucky, marshy. But if it freezes overnight, you've got frozen footprints, and who knows what's going to happen after that. I mean, it could have happened right before some volcanic event and the ash cloud covered them up, or, you know, there's lots of ways that these things can get preserved, but they have to be just the right conditions at just the right time. So it is pretty amazing. Sure. Or they pour the cement and then you put your handprints in them and you sign them.
Right.
Gronk was here.
Yeah, Gronk was here.
Hey, Gronk. Motion picture star Gronk. Okay.
Anyway. Look at this picture of a caveman drawing a picture of a caveman. Oh, it's a selfie.
Caveman selfie. Earliest known selfie. Let's move on to our patrons. We love our patrons, and you can be one of them if you go over to, where is my Patreon thing? There it is. Patreon.com/Technorama podcast, like the following people did. For as little as a dollar an episode, you get your name enshrined on the show, and you also get a special episode of Technorama available exclusively to our Patreon people. So thank you very much to Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Man, Danny Mortensen, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorgis Rowan, Christina. One of these days I'm going to try and make this through on one breath. You think that's possible?
I challenge you.
Kyle Nishioka, we'll try it next time. Leon, yeah. Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshi. I'm sorry, I've been doing that so long I've been messing up.
Weshi.
No, there's no T sound in it. It's
Weshi. Oh, you told me it was.
No. No. Read it when it came up on the birthday calendar, it's like the first sound of wet. First with Weshi.
Oh, that's how you do.
Yes.
Well, you said wet, and I was like, okay, it's Weshi. Okay.
Steve Therrien, Spiffy, Steve Cody, Steve London, and Intentionally Left Blank. We got a new member, Intentionally Left Blank?
Yeah. Okay. No.
No. Okay.
No, great. It's actually empty for you, the listener, to come in and subscribe to our Patreon.
That would be awesome. Patreon.com/Technorama podcast. And we will get that next episode of the parody show, as we call it, P-A-R-I-T-Y, out to you right away. Thank you very much. And out with the Imperial Band. Done. I can't remember which one of these sliders was on the right channel. Because I can't see my little... There, couldn't see the label. The iPad was over it. And what do we have next? Remote.
Yeah.
Do you have your remote with you? I have mine.
Yeah, hand it here. Okay. Here you go. Here, hand me that one.
That's your phone. Here. Thanks. Oh. Thanks for the new phone. Our special effects leave a lot to be Didn't we do Hidden Figures already once?
We talked about them through NASA, about NASA, because remember they renamed the street.
Oh, you're right. We haven't been doing this segment that long because I do recall mentioning it because I watched it on the way back from
Israel.
We'll
talk about the first movie and we'll get to the other one.
First movie is a new Borat movie and it has a really long secondary title that I can't remember, but it's like
subsequent movie film
for the glorious honor of Kazakhstan or something.
Yeah.
If you liked the first one, I invite you to watch the second one. If it's not your cup of tea, it is rated R. It does have some really gratuitous things that make you go, oh dear. Yeah. I should not be watching this. Okay. So, but, it's Borat. It's a movie. And as I understand it, the story was changed partway through because they started filming this before COVID. And then they changed the storyline towards the end, and you get the reveal at the end going, that was actually pretty darn creative of the writers to do that. And that makes me wonder what the original storyline was. Probably maybe not as funny if they didn't have this as a punchline. So I'm not going to ruin it for you. If you want to go see it, it's pretty funny. It just came out a few days ago. So we watched it with Lisa and Grantis because they introduced us to Borat. And it was the first movie came out in 2006. And he starts out by, hey, I'm going to America. And he gets to America and everybody recognizes him from the first movie.
Wait a minute. I like it when he says, I'm going to America and everybody's shooing him off.
Oh, yeah. He was booted out of the country. He is not a a rock star over there at the beginning of the movie.
So what did you think of it?
I thought it was pretty darn funny.
I thought it was funny, too. Yeah. I enjoyed the first one and it felt awkward watching it. But then after I was done, I went, I actually enjoyed that. And I did the same thing here. I was like, that was really awkward, but I enjoyed it.
He does have those moments where he puts himself into a difficult situation, kind of like in the first movie when he went to Texas and he started singing, the national anthem of Kazakhstan to our tune and he got booed at. But Sasha Cohen, what's his last name?
Baron Cohen.
Yeah, Sasha Baron Cohen. He really knows how to work people. It's pretty darn funny because a lot of these people, like the first movie, they were completely unaware of who they were dealing with and what it was about. So we got really good candid moments in this one.
I will give credit. I don't remember all of her name.
The lady who was babysitting or the girl?
The daughter.
The daughter. Oh, she did a marvelous job.
Maria Bakalova.
Yeah, was she from
Bakalova? Bakalova.
Where was she from? She was from not Bosnia. I can't remember. She was from an Eastern Bloc country.
Yeah, I was just looking at her. I was trying to pull it up. Anyway, she did a fantastic job too, almost as good as he did.
I would argue she did better.
By the way, there's one scene. It's in the trailer. Where he's in the truck,
yeah,
he gets pulled over, and she's on the top of the truck. Remember that scene?
I think that got pulled from.
And he told the cop only men and bears are allowed in the truck.
I think that got pulled from the movie. She was
no, it was in the movie. They got pulled over.
I don't remember.
It was in the trailer. Was it?
Not everything in the trailer got into the movie.
You're right.
Grant just noted that too. He said. I wasn't. They missed. They pulled right at like at the beginning of the movie. He says they just pulled an entire scene.
Yeah. Well, that scene that was in the trailer, I happened to see an article where the police had released the body cam footage from that, and they kind of figured out that it had what was going on after a little bit, but they weren't familiar with Borat, or the character.
Right.
So at least one of them wasn't so much. And then they figured it out. And then they were both like, where is the camera? And they were looking for where the camera was. Oh, that was kind of funny.
That was pretty good. All right. Let's talk about your movie, Hidden Figures. I think we've mentioned this before because I remember watching it on the way back from Israel in 2019.
We may have talked about it a little bit, but I watched and I put down here that it's on Disney Plus because it is on Disney Plus for this month, I guess. And well, at least this month. I happened to see it. I'm like, oh yeah, I've been meaning to watch that. So I watched it. I'm aware of the story because we talked about them being honored at NASA yep. by renaming the road out in front of the Katherine Johnson building for NASA. But watching this movie, I was like, I don't know how I didn't know about any of these women that, you know, really propelled things forward and their talents. And I was, you know, watching it and I had to look some stuff up, but they, of course, all of this in the movie was basically historically accurate, except for the time. They kind of compressed it all down. The women didn't really know each other very well, really, mm-hmm. but it, like they did in the movie, and they actually worked at different time, not time frames, but they overlap, but they worked in different eras in the space program. But, a lot of the things that they did and they showed in the movie were real and, happened. And it's just amazing to me that, you know, somebody, especially, as talented with the numbers, just to think if they had not engaged, Katherine, because of her skin color, some of that math would have never happened or would have just gone, you know, unknowing, you know what I'm saying? It would have never happened and it would have set them back. And rather than propel them, if they just engaged her early on and not, it wasn't a big deal, but I thought it was really telling. And I had no idea about this, that John Glenn wasn't going to go up unless this lady's numbers were right.
That's pretty cool.
You know, and to put that much faith in her at that time, I thought that was pretty telling.
Was that fact verified or was that just from the movie?
No, that was real.
Okay.
That was true. Unless her numbers didn't line up, he wasn't going to go.
There's a lot of stories like that throughout history. You think about a lot of astronomers doing their calculations. Those were done by women, unsung heroes. Mm-hmm. You think about the code breakers in World War II. A lot of those were women, unsung heroes. Yep. This one is doubly effective for me because it's not just the women behind the scenes. It's the African-American women who almost lost their jobs. I forgot what the leader's name was. Katherine that said, hey, they're bringing in this computer. We're going to learn computers. It's adapt or die.
Yeah. Her name was Dorothy.
Dorothy. That's the one.
Yeah. I love that she actually went in and, picked up the machine and started to learn it. Just like somebody took the initiative on her own. Of course she moved the little probe she goes, oh, this is in the wrong place. So the machine was actually working. But then she taught everybody else Fortran. To get them all up to speed. And I was like, wow, that really tells, you know, that's pretty telling that they would take the initiative. Not only that, but then she would pass it on trying to bring everybody up with her, which was great.
When your job's on the line, you look at what's coming down the road and how can I be part of that?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that I was in their situation as far as obviously the race and things that the other pressures that they've had because of that. But I've been in those kind of situations where I got to learn this and move on. So I could, in that respect, I could relate to it. And I thought it was awesome that she was doing that and then bringing up everybody with her. And that was a moment that really got to me, believe it or not.
All right. We do have one sad note. I hate to end on a sad note, but we're going to move on to the Geek Library. Are we going to rate our shows? Are we still going to rate them?
I would give these both awesome rating. I don't know. Two awesomes.
I give the Borat one, you know, maybe a 7.5 or an 8. It was a bit crude. I mean, it's not for everybody. If you like the old one, you like the new one. I liked the first one because of its originality. So not that this one was a you know, riding on the coattails of that character. Mm-hmm. But you know, the new actress, she brought in a new flavor for it. So I liked it pretty well. I'd say I'll give it an 8. The Hidden Figures. Yeah. I'm going to go with like a straight up 10. I loved that movie. I love the story it told. I love the way it was portrayed. That one, high figures in my book. How about you?
Right. By the way, one more. You're right. And another chilling moment, not chilling, but I don't know if that's the right word. When she was explaining how she had to go to the bathroom. She's soaking wet. And she explained how she had to go to the bathroom. That whole moment went from he thought he knew what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden he was realizing that he was wrong. And then they did such a great job with that. I felt awkward. Like I was watching it. Like it was.
Where she had to go like outside to the next building to.
Yeah. She's soaking wet and had to go to the bathroom somewhere else in another building. And then when he thinks that he's busting her for goofing off or not being, you know, doing what she's supposed to, and to come up with that, that answer and you go, oh, I'm the jackass.
Yeah. I mean, she throws kind of the inequity back in his face going, look, if you want me to
stay. I had that awkward feeling like, oh, you know, like I was, you're kind of watching it and you go, oh,
yep,
that's not good.
So, all right, let's do the Geek Library, and then I think we are out of here soon. All right, sad note, if you missed it, the amazing Randy has passed away. So, we will miss him. I remember seeing him, what was it, back in the 70s? At least in the 80s, hearing about what he was and what his job was about and what he was trying to do. Debunk a lot of these people. There are some wonderful videos. If you follow the link, you go to chuckchat.com/technorama, find our episode 617. Check out the show notes. This will be in the Geek Library section of that. I watched every single one of these videos and enjoyed them just as much. He was 92. Mm-hmm. So if you're not familiar with Randy, he calls himself a conjurer, not a magician, because that would imply he was, you know, he was actually debunking a lot of people that were claiming to be psychics or healers or things of this nature, that
soothsayers,
dowsers. He's gone off a lot of people. So you know, just to say, look, you know, stop cheating people and live in the real world. But he also said, it doesn't matter how smart you are, how old you are, you can be deceived. So let that be a warning to all of us, especially when the emotions are running high. I mean, there was an article in the recent AARP magazine that a close friend told me about.
Right.
I'm too young to read the AARP magazine, definitely.
You read somebody else's copy. That's what it was.
Something like that.
No, hey, I'm going to tell you.
Well, hang on, let me finish. The woman was saying that when COVID was first firing up, you know, toilet paper was hard to get, and there was an ad on Facebook for masks. And because of the emotional connection to, oh my gosh, you know, I need masks and I don't know if I'll be able to get, she sent her money off and never got any masks. So scams are out there, especially in more trying times like we have now. So be extra alert.
Yeah. Well, as far as Randy goes, I'll be honest with you. I don't know how I sidestepped him my entire life, but I did not know him until at Dragon Con, Megan Enlow asked me to take a picture of her with him. He was right there. She was like, can you believe he's right there? I was like, sure. I'll be honest with you. I had no idea. And I watched the Tonight Show and stuff like that. I'm surprised I didn't know who James Randi was.
Well, that's because on the Tonight Show, he wasn't really on the Tonight Show, but he was setting things up to debunk people like Uri Geller.
My whole life, I had no idea who this guy was yet. This is the kind of guy I should have known through some of my circles. I don't know how I danced around him, but so I watched all these videos and I thought they were pretty amazing. I knew about him because of that picture that she had me take. I was like, well, who was this guy? So I ended up looking it up later and I went, oh, okay.
Do you remember what year that was?
Excuse me?
Do you remember what year?
I want to say 16. I have to go look at my photos.
Oh, fairly recently. Okay. I thought it was one of our earlier years. Like
one of her, I think it was the last year that, Megan came to, Dragon Con.
Alrighty.
So I'm just taking a guess there, but anyway, amazing guy. And I loved his thought process, especially that TED video. He comes out and he's, yeah. automatically, the first thing he did was he said, you know, it's easy to be deceived. You think I'm wearing glasses, but I can't see anything because these are dummy glasses. And he ends up taking his real glasses
you
out.
You made some assumptions. You know, this device that I picked up and started talking into like a microphone is not a microphone. It's a beard trimmer. You know, I could tell it was not a microphone because you could hear his real microphone rustling against his shirt. So if you have ears, but you know, you can be fooled. And then, what else did he do? I definitely am going to borrow some of his lines. Like when he starts stumbling over his words and he goes, I'm all right. Keep your seats.
Like, yes, right.
Yeah. Like, oh, I am so borrowing that at some point.
You know what? I thought the same thing and I just knew you would probably do that.
Always looking for a way to, you know, keep people entertained as well as educated. So we will miss you, James Randi. He was, 80?
Well, I miss 92. You now. I didn't know who 92. You were then.
Yeah, I miss you.
I miss him.
I miss him. He kind of looked like Santa Claus. We miss Santa Claus. All right. We are going to go right on to our Patreon show recording after this, but we will leave you with our question of the week. What lives in your brain rent-free?
Yeah. What rattles around in your brain that you've kept around in all these years?
You mean things that you remember that you really don't need to anymore?
Sure.
Like phone numbers of your childhood friends that don't live there anymore?
Yeah. I think of the Flintstones often. They kind of run around in my head.
Okay. All righty. I can remember phone numbers from kids when I was 10 years old, but I can't remember barely remember my wife's phone number today.
That's not a good thing. So what lives in your brain rent-free?
Many Bugs Bunny lines.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up. That's all, folks.
Wrapping it up then. Playing the outro. Thank you for watching. We can probably put away the Patreon title. If you want to get a hold of us, you can go over to chuckchat.com/technorama. We have all of our show notes over there. You can get a hold of us on the listener line, 707. I never put that one up there. Though Donna's better at this than I am. 707-530-2428. That's 707-530-CHAT. We kind of made it easy for you. Or get a hold of us on email at technorama@chuckchat.com. We'd love to hear from you. So many of you have written in. Thank you very much for that. We will get you into the feedback section of the show if it is appropriate and timely and not too long. Until then, tell a friend about Technorama. We will see you here back on Halloween night. Or, Craig, are you going to be sitting in the driveway?
No, I'll be here.
Okay, because the kids will be done. Give them a binary high five till then.
All right, 101.
Take care, everybody.